Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking. To another episode of Fan Junkies Radio. It's episode 13. Yes, 13 episodes in and still going strong. I'm your host, Jonathan Ragus. Alongside me, as always, my partner in crime, Mike McShane. Mike, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing great today, Jonathan. 13, that's a lucky number, right?
It should be.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, 13 episodes. We've missed a few, unfortunately. Things happen, but we keep coming back.
Absolutely, absolutely, because we know everybody wants to hear what we have to say.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the numbers are rising. You know, 13 episodes, and we're in the thousands with listeners already. So
that's tremendous.
It is. It really is great. Tremendous. And you know what? You got to thank all the people around us. Not only the listeners of this show, but people we know in the blog world and people we know in sports media. And we definitely send our thanks out to all of you for helping us grow.
Absolutely.
Right off the bat, I'm going to give the number, 347-237-5373. If you want to call, ask a question, tell us we suck, throw out your opinion, we welcome it all. But if you curse, might have to curse at you back.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just get shut off. That's that simple. Mike, it's going to be a long one today.
Well, it's a long one, though, on the last day of Major League Baseball.
Yes.
I mean, this is incredible. It feels like it just started to me. I mean, doesn't it feel like it just started?
Yeah, it feels like it started to me back in the early 1900s, and it hasn't stopped. So.
That's what I forgot. You're not a big baseball fan.
No, I am. It just, every game, it feels like basically Steve Traxel's not only pitching, but he's also batting, producing, doing the commercials and everything. It's just so drawn out now.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's the kind of thing, though, you start to appreciate it as you go through the I was going to say dog days of winter, and that's really what they are, the doldrums of winter. As it gets into March and April, and you're just anxious to see baseball being played. And I don't know. It's just funny when all of a sudden you turn around, and here it is. You know, it's the beginning of October, and we're on the very last day of the season.
To be honest, I like when it starts. If they could pull,
you like when it's over.
I like when it starts, and I like when it's over, but I also like the playoffs. But before we get further, we have a call, and we have Brett from New Jersey on the line. Brett, how you doing, buddy?
How are you back today?
What's going on?
Great. All right. Well, here's what I'm calling in for. There's a topic that's pretty much being discussed nonstop all around the country, and it's going to only intensify as we go forward, and it is of the American League MVP race. And this is something that I feel very, very passionate about. So before I go ahead and tell you guys what I think, where do you guys lean right now as to who is the American League MVP? Is it Miguel Cabrera or is it Mike Trout?
Oh, easily Mike Trout.
Well, I kind of go back and forth on it a little bit.
Of course you would, Mike.
Well, yeah, really. Because, when you take a look at the numbers, one would say it probably has to be Cabrera. But based on the circumstances, I might lean to saying, hey, it should probably be Trout. So I'm kind of in the middle on it, I'll be perfectly honest.
John, what is it that makes you immediately say Mike Trout?
Only because there hasn't been a player that has come out and done so much in so little time. And, you would just have to give it to him. I mean, a 324 batting average, 30 home runs, 83 RBIs, 129 runs, but almost 50 stolen bases.
Yeah.
And, he's not a little dude, Mike Trout.
No, he's not.
No, he's not. I mean, I know he played 40 games, last year? I think he played in this year, around 100 and whatever, 30-something. But I honestly think he's really deserved. And not to take anything away from Miguel Cabrera. Miguel Cabrera has had a really phenomenal season. But
yes.
I think there are a lot of cases for both players. In my opinion, I would go at Mike Trout. Others would go at Cabrera. But, you know, what's basically pissing you off about it, Brett?
Yeah, where are you at, Brett?
You know, I am 150% on the side that this award, it almost seems like a no-brainer that this should go to Mike Trout. You know, Mike Trout, you know, maybe I'm a little biased. Mike Trout is a hometown kid. I know his family, you know, and this town, just 20 minutes from Philadelphia, you know, this has always been a Phillies town, but this year it's kind of crazy that we have transformed to Angels territory. This entire city is nothing but Angels memorabilia. You walk in grocery stores, you walk downtown, and everybody has Angels hats on, Mike Trout jerseys, T-shirts. It's crazy. So maybe I'm a little biased, but it drives me up the wall that people are saying that Miguel Cabrera, just because he is probably going to win the Triple Crown, which I guess hasn't been done since, I believe, 1967. Is that
right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Hasn't been done since 1967. So there's this unspoken notion out there that just because Miguel Cabrera is going to win the Triple Crown, that the Triple Crown automatically equals a Most Valuable Player award, which I understand. It's a it's cool. You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Who knows if any of us are going to see something like this happen again. It's a great thing that he's going to accomplish. I'm not taking that away from him. I love Miguel Cabrera. He's one of my favorite players in baseball. And I think, honestly, if I'm a manager or a GM and I can pick any player in the league to bat for me in Game 7 of the World Series tomorrow, I'd probably pick Miguel Cabrera to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, Miguel Cabrera is not the best player in baseball this year, and here is my reasoning. First off, as John mentioned, the runs. 129 runs Miguel Cabrera has this year. Mike Trout has this year. That's absurd. A rookie, 129 runs in a season.
Yep.
That is the third most by an AL rookie since some guys named Joe DiMaggio in 1936 and Ted Williams in 1939.
That's who were those guys?
Crazy. That's crazy.
It is. It is.
You know, and then you look at Miguel Cabrera's past numbers. If you look at Miguel Cabrera's numbers for the last three seasons, this is actually his worst year statistically of the last three seasons.
Yes,
that's true.
If you look at Justin Verlander's number, Miguel Cabrera's teammate, you look at Verlander's numbers, he's actually having an identical season this year as last year when he won the MVP in Cy Young. So, in my opinion, Miguel Cabrera almost isn't the MVP of his own team.
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're right.
Let me ask you this, Brett. Would a Rookie of the Year award compromise?
No. I would come off as ignorant in saying that because, you know, Jason Stark did an article for ESPN.com yesterday where he gave out his yearly awards. And he touched on this, and you know, he also said that Mike Trout deserved the award, and he also had in there the phrase that, you know, I don't understand why there's this notion that just because Miguel Cabrera is going to win the Triple Crown, that automatically means an MVP. You know, I think it would be ignorant of me to say, well, the Rookie of the Year is good enough, or sufficient. You know, I think that's the same mindset as, okay, Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown, that equals an MVP. Mike Trout's having a great season. That equals a Rookie of the Year. I think the best total package player deserves the Most Valuable Player. When you factor in defense, Mike Trout is going to win a Gold Glove. He has to win a Gold Glove. The defensive plays that he made this year, he probably has three of the top 10 total plays in all of baseball this year.
Yes.
You know, when you factor in that, I think, you know, when it comes to fielding and defense and stolen bases, I think, you know, there's hands down, that goes into Mike Trout's favor.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Angels had Mike Trout, they were 6-14. Since he joined the squad in, I believe, early May, 82-57, best record in baseball. And you know, I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yep.
No, listen. I'm all for it. I'm all for what you're saying. I believe Mike Trout deserves it. And as you even stated, Jason Stark said it. And Jason Stark had, you know, really good opinions on why Mike Trout should win it. And
yeah.
Jason Stark is one of the best in baseball.
Yes, he is.
So, you know, you would have to, you know, take his opinion and, you know, basically turn that around into a fact.
Yep.
Easily.
Absolutely. You know, and the one thing that I know a lot of the I know a lot of the stat junkies and the people that are into sabermetrics and things like that are pointing out that Mike Trout, his WAR this year is actually at a 10.7. That actually went up 0.2 over the last 2 days. So his WAR is a 10.7 right now. In the history of baseball, only 13 position players have reached a WAR of 10.5 or higher. Every single one of them is in the Hall of Fame. The last center fielder to do that in baseball, Willie Mays, 1964. It baffles my mind that this is even a discussion. It irritates me. It makes me angry.
Well, you know, it might make for an exciting thing if Trout actually does walk away from it. And then we'll have even more conversations about it, about how Cabrera deserved it more than Trout and vice versa throughout the
I think you make some valid points, Brett. I really do. I still, nonetheless, I kind of lean to the belief that, you know, to accomplish something that hasn't been done since 1967, I think there's got to be some merit given to that, and I don't know how you do that, but I think you make some very valid points.
There's one more point that I need to make that I didn't even really think about until I saw somebody tweet this today on Twitter, and that is that one of the big points that people are pointing out as to why Cabrera deserves the MVP over Trout is that the Tigers are in the playoffs, and the Angels, obviously, they're going to miss out by a game or two. So that's a valid point. You know, obviously, to be valuable, you should be able to lead your teams in the playoffs. And maybe if Trout had a full season, maybe he does that. If he plays that first month, they probably don't go 6-15 in the month.
Well, you know, considering of, you know, what the Angels did in the offseason by bringing in Pujols and banking that, wow, you know what, between C.J. Wilson, Albert Pujols, this is a team to beat. And they weren't until they brought Mike Trout up.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, he impacted so much of the Angels' just baseball season this year. You know, you would have to think if he was up for the full season, because he's had a healthy season and he played the full, you know, schedule, they're only four games behind.
Yep.
Exactly.
You know, that's not a big dip from the games that he could have played. I honestly think that the Angels could have hit the wild card or maybe even, you know, pushed up and won a division.
Well, had they really started making a move before the All-Star break, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's what I think is most baffling about people that are saying that Miguel Cabrera led the Tigers to the playoffs. Number one, Detroit has played Kansas City and Cleveland a total of 35 times this year.
Yeah.
35 times they've played the Royals and the Indians. Whereas the Angels have spent their entire season playing against the Oakland Athletics and the Texas Rangers, who are both battling up to the last day for that, the championship in their run. The Angels also have more wins than the Tigers, playing against more elite opponents.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I'm curious
to see where this is going to go, and I think the way that I hope it finishes, if it's not a Mike Trout MVP award on his own, I hope they get to share the award. That would be fine with me.
No, I hear you, Brett. Well, dude, Brett, thanks for calling in, man. We're going to
thanks,
man. We really appreciate it. Calling again. You know, Mike, it's definitely a valuable comment. Well, actually, we have another caller from the 646 area code, so let's bring in this caller quick before we even go into anything else. 646, what's going on?
What's going on, Fan Junkies? It's Joey from New York again.
Oh, Big Joe.
What's up, man?
How we doing, Joey?
Man, first off, Mike Trout, MVP, hands down. Miguel Cabrera, Triple Crown winner, phenomenal achievement, but he has that achievement as a crown, literally, you know, to stand on its own feet. Trout, defense, everything, speed, he may have added a whole different element to the Angels.
Yeah.
Without him, the Angels are not where they are right now. I think even without Miguel Cabrera, the Tigers are still a formidable team. Yeah, they'll lose a little bit on offense, but I think they're still good enough to compete. Trout just had such an impact. You know, he completely changed that team from the moment he joined them.
Yes,
and,
he did.
And I believe an MVP is an overall player, offense, defense, you name it. He gets it done. Mike Trout does all of those things.
Wait, Joey, you really think that the Tigers would be leading their division, going to the playoffs if they did not have Cabrera?
Well, Maybe more like running for maybe contending for a wild card, because the White Sox have had a great year led by former Met Robin Ventura. But But they have enough pitching that they could compete.
Well, you look in the Central, the Detroit Tigers, hands down, have the best rotation and even bullpen.
Exactly. And pitching wins in baseball. So even if you lose Miguel Cabrera for an extended period of time, with the even their bullpen's pretty formidable. So
yeah.
I believe even without him, the Detroit Tigers would still be a contending team. The Angels, on the other hand, in my opinion, for the most part, have underachieved when you consider what they've been in the offseason.
Well, it wasn't until
Mike Trout joined them when they called them up that everything changed for them.
Well, I think
so if you take Mike Trout out of the equation, the Angels are not where they are right now.
No, absolutely
I think, though, Brett, our former caller, just made a good point, and that is that the Angels have the unenviable position of sitting in a rather tough division. You know, if they're sitting up there in the Central, they're winners.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the American League West, especially who would have thought the Oakland A's would do what they're doing right now? That's
a great point.
Well, you know what? Like Mike said, you take the Detroit Tigers out of the Central, you drop them into the West, Angels are still a better team. They got a better record and everything. And like you said, Joey, and like we said before, for all the stuff that they did this offseason, they were banking on really contending and getting back to the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Albert Pujols, still one of the best hitters in the game. You give him all this money, you give C.J. Wilson a big contract, and they didn't do absolutely anything until they called up Mike Trout. So if you look at the four games behind in the West, behind Texas and Oakland, and seeing that he only played 138 games and he could have played another 20-plus games, they could have easily taken the West.
With due respect, I don't think Pujols had quite the season that we've become used to seeing from Pujols.
No, absolutely not. He hasn't.
No.
He hasn't. And you know what? He did not look comfortable from the beginning.
No, he hasn't.
Angels. What do you have this year? He picked it up. 30 home runs, 105 RBIs. Not terrible, but not Albert Pujols as well.
He picked it up later in the season. As you pointed out, I think the early part of the season is what really when he was, you know, as you point out, the least comfortable.
Well, didn't he start off like the first month, like 2 for 40 or something like that?
Yeah, well,
in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean it was not good. Let's put it that way. I mean, everybody was sitting around waiting for him to hit a home run.
Yeah.
It seemed to take forever.
Well, you guys had to expect that. You know how it is for a lot of free agents, especially if you're changing leagues. I mean, despite free agency and player movement and whatnot, but you're going into new ballparks, it's just a whole different thing. And then you have to add an element of pressure. I mean, I don't care if you're playing in New York, L.A., Chicago. If you go from a relatively smaller market like St. Louis,
yes.
So now you're playing in front of the big stage, you know, in one of these big cities like New York or Chicago or in L.A., the amount of pressure, the media, everything, it's tenfold compared to what you have in St. Louis. What they have, like one paper compared to what they have in L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a great sports town, but you know what? The media is not like the East. It's not in New York or Boston, and it's definitely not out West like it is in Los Angeles.
No, not at all. But the L.A. media compared to the St. Louis media, I mean, it's a huge difference.
Well, that's an outstanding.
The East Coast is bigger and more intense.
Yes.
That's an outstanding point, Joey. I agree with you. I think that there was a, you know, and the way that he was brought into that city, I mean, he was hailed as being their automatic ticket to the World Series. So I think that you make a very valid point there. There was a lot of pressure on him. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, absolutely. There's been a ton of pressure on him. But, you know, then again, you know, the age is there. You know, it could be setting in. So who knows? You know, we'll see what happens next season.
I personally think he's a little older than his actual birth certificate says, but, you know, that's a whole other topic.
Well, I hate to say it, like most players out there. I mean, who knows if Albert Pujols is even his real name? So
I think you might have. Real quick,
guys, prediction tonight, Yankees, Baltimore, what's going to happen? Who's going to win? Are we going to have a one-game playoff, which I'm kind of hoping for? What's going
to
happen?
Baltimore.
I would love to see a one-game playoff. I think it would be phenomenal. However, I think the Yankees will probably win. And the way it's looking, you know, at that point, then it doesn't really make any difference. But if Baltimore wins or loses, it wouldn't make any difference. Nothing I would love to see more than for Boston to beat the Yankees, to be honest with you, and for Baltimore to beat Tampa Bay and have a one-gamer tomorrow.
Well, you know what? I believe in karma, Mike. Joey, I don't know if you heard. I believe in karma. I said the Seahawks were going to lose, Packers were going to win. I was right because of the karma of that.
Oh, here we go.
Game.
Here we go.
Yep. It's coming.
It.
It's the
Did
ghost.
Did I call the Seahawks Rams game? I told you the Rams were going to win.
But listen,
did I call it or what?
You know what? staying with the Orioles and Yankees, it's the ghost. I mean, he's not dead, but I'm going to call it this anyway. It's the ghost of Tony Tarasco. It's coming back.
There you go.
Orioles are going to compete, man. I can feel the power. The juices are running.
All
right, Joey, thanks for giving us a call. We appreciate it, buddy.
All right.
Good job, my man.
Big Joe from Brooklyn, man. Great calls, but guess over 20 minutes dedicated to baseball, that's just way too much for me.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you must be, you're going nuts over there, huh?
It's always good talking baseball with great fans. Brett from Jersey, Joe from Brooklyn, thanks for the calls. We appreciate it. We went about, over 20 minutes of baseball. So we went probably 19 minutes longer than I really wanted to.
Don't forget Fred House Mike, great fan of baseball, huh?
Well, I mean, of course.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
All right, listen.
My co-host isn't.
Let's talk football.
We'll get off the baseball stuff real quick.
We got a little over half an hour
show. That's good.
And so, we'll just run down. You know what? Let's start with our picks.
All right.
What happened in week four? Who's in the lead? Is it me or you?
You are currently in the lead overall. You are 36-27. I am 34-29.
Damn straight I am.
So you are two games above me at this point.
Listen, by the end of the season, Mike, I'm sorry, it's going to be about 12.
Well, yeah, if you extrapolate it, it'll be a heck of a lot more than that. So,
this week it's going to be good. This week, I'm sorry to tell you this, but you'll be terminated.
Uh-oh. Well, that's all right.
All right. Well, let's start with our week five picks. We got some good games this week, actually.
Some good games.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this this week. So let's start with the Thursday night game.
Yeah.
The 4-0, Kevin Cobb led Arizona Cardinals against Joey from Brooklyn, one of his favorite teams, the St. Louis Rams. And the line's a little low here, but then again, I think that's good.
Well, yeah, great point, huh? And, I'm looking at it and I'm going 1.5 is the line in favor of Arizona. I didn't look at the lines until this morning. I would have expected that to be potentially a lot higher on the side of Arizona, particularly in light of all the brouhaha that the Arizona Cardinals have been getting. I'll tell you where I'm going. I'm going with the Rams because, frankly, I've been saying it now for a couple of weeks. I am waiting for the Arizona Cardinals bubble to burst. I think it might be this week.
Really?
Yep.
If you lose to the Rams, that's not too bad.
Yep.
Rams are a good team.
Take it to the Rams.
If it happens. Okay, so you're taking the Rams. I got the Cardinals.
Yep. Had a feeling it was going that way.
Yeah. Okay, the Atlanta Falcons, who are also undefeated, which is not a surprise to me because I said in the beginning of the year I had a feeling they were going to do something good, and I think Matt Ryan's finally reaching his high point. Against the RG3-led Washington Redskins, and the line's at 3 in favor of the Falcons.
Yeah, and, you might be not surprised that they're 4-0, the Atlanta Falcons, but I am. I frankly didn't think that they were quite that good. RG3 does not surprise me. I didn't expect him. I mean, after week one, I really didn't expect, I kind of thought he would cool off a little bit. Atlanta's favored by 3. I'm taking Atlanta.
I got Atlanta as well. Okay, your Philadelphia Eagles at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Line is at 3.5 in favor of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's a tough one. As much as I hate to do it, I got to go with Pittsburgh on this one. I'm just not confident. I don't feel it. I mean, that's about as much as I can say on it. I just don't feel it. I don't feel that the Eagles have another comeback win in them to go up against the Steelers.
Okay, I hear you. Well, I'm actually going to go with the eastern side of Pennsylvania, and I'm going to pick Philadelphia here.
Are you kidding me?
Well, of course, man.
Oh my gosh.
Of course, I'm going with Philly. The line's not that high. Like I said, not the Pittsburgh Steelers of old. I think Philly might be in for a good game finally, and
I think you looked at my picks in advance. I think that's probably how had to look.
I just got here. could barely make my own. Probably not. All right, I got the Eagles. Okay, Green Bay at Indianapolis, no brainer.
I guess you could say it's a no brainer. I think the line's a bit high. I'm going to be honest with you. I think the Green Bay Packers have not shown us the Green Bay Packers that we're used to, or have been expecting. I have been terribly disappointed with Aaron Rodgers. So I think the line is a bit high. But Indianapolis is still a young and up-and-coming team, so therefore I got to go with Green Bay.
Okay, I got Green Bay as well. But my question is, do we finally see Green Bay score over 30 points?
Good question. You know, the way things have gone at this point right now, and if we see the same Aaron Rodgers we've been seeing, I would say no.
Okay.
What's the over-under on it? The over-under on this game is currently 47.5.
Yeah.
So.
It doesn't look too good.
No.
All right, no-brainer here. New York Giants, Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
Do we even need to discuss that?
Giants are favored by 9.
Man, you know what? Whedon is going to get killed.
Maybe.
I'm looking at about 7 sacks this game, if not more.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I you know, I'm going to say, I frankly have been somewhat more impressed with Cleveland than I thought I would be. Line might be
the guy that wants Cabrera over Trout for the MVP. Come on.
The line might be a little bit high. Then again, I might be wrong. You might want to take it. I'm not sure. But the Giants for sure.
No brainer. Giants. Whedon's going to get sacked multiple times. Multiple times. It's going to happen. All right, let's move it on. Tennessee Titans at the Minnesota Vikings, who are starting to surprise a little bit. The line's at 5.5 in favor of Minnesota.
Yeah, I just got done writing an article on the first quarter of the season, and I put Minnesota in as one of my fabulous teams, and I don't mean fabulous from the standpoint that they're a fabulous team, but just from the standpoint that they're so quietly have worked their way up to 3-1. Who'd have thunk this? And I brought it up on the Monday show. They're favored by 5.5. I'm taking them.
Taking who? Minnesota?
Yeah, I'm taking Minnesota. I think the momentum's on their side.
Yeah, I'm actually with you there. I'm actually picking the Vikings in this matchup.
Okay.
The Miami Dolphins at the Cincinnati Bengals. Bengals are favored 3.5.
Excuse me. I don't know where that line's coming from. Miami, and I've said this. I said it on Monday. I'm going to say it again. Miami is a deceptive team. I think they're better than their record indicates. I'm very, very impressed with their defense. I'm picking Miami to upset.
Picking Miami. Okay, I actually have Miami down as well. As much as it makes me sick, and I can taste some bad, funky things in the back of my throat right now, I'm picking Miami.
Yep.
That'll make Glenn happy. All right, Baltimore Ravens at the Kansas City Chiefs. Baltimore is only favored by 5. It's Kansas City.
This is the biggest no-brainer on the list. Can I tell you something right now? That line should be higher. Everybody should be running out right now, putting their money on Baltimore. Take Baltimore and take the line.
All right. Got Baltimore there as well. Seattle Seahawks at the Carolina Panthers. Carolina favored by 3.
I don't like Carolina. And it's not that I don't like Carolina. I just don't like Carolina, period. Is anybody getting that? I think they're overrated. I similarly think Seattle is. However, I'm going to take Seattle on this one.
Okay, I got Carolina. I think Marshawn Lynch is going to have a big day against the Carolina defense. But in the end, I think Cam Newton's going to find his stride, and he's going to rush in for a couple of touchdowns, and that's going to be it. Still not impressed by Seattle just yet. Chicago Bears at Jacksonville Jaguars. To me, the line should be higher only because they got Matt Forte back. You know, even Jay Cutler can't have a terrible day against the Jacksonville Jaguars defense, do you think?
I wouldn't think so. This is the second biggest no-brainer on the list. Again, yeah, I agree with you. The line, I think, is a little bit low. Everybody should be running out right now. Put your money on Baltimore and Chicago. Get that line while it's low.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I actually have Chicago as well. I mean, definitely no-brainer. Denver Broncos. I almost said Denver Nuggets. Okay, I guess I'm getting that cool thing. All right, Denver Broncos at the New England Patriots. Patriots are favored by 7.
That's high.
That's what I was thinking. Thank you.
Yeah.
I didn't want to sound like a jerk by saying it because, you know, I'm a Jets fan, but still, that's kind of high.
Yeah, I think that's a high line.
Denver's not Buffalo.
Exactly. Thank you. I heard a comment being made today. It might have been on Mike and Mike, actually. Interesting matchup here. You know, when you think about it, it's very possible this could be one of the last times that we will see Brady go up against Peyton Manning. I'm going to tell you, I think the line's high. I like what Peyton's doing with Denver. I like Denver's team. I'm picking Denver on this one. I'm going to go out on a limb and take the upset.
I was leaning that way, but then I said, you know what? Every time I pick against them, they win. So just to, you know, maybe even help the AFC East a little bit. I'm gonna pick New England here.
All right.
So I pick Miami and New England. It's hurting me. It really is hurting me. It really is hurting me. I gotta tell you.
You want to skip those from now on, or is that?
Yeah, I think we might.
I think maybe what you do is just default those to me. How about that?
Nah, we'll go the other way. All right. Buffalo Bills at San Francisco 49ers. 49ers favored by 9.5.
I think the line's a little high, but take San Fran.
Yeah, San Fran as well. No brainer to me. San Diego Chargers at the New Orleans Saints. Saints favored by 3.5. I think that's a little high right now.
This is a fascinating matchup, I got to tell you, in my opinion. San Diego is the Minnesota Vikings of the AFC. Where in the world did they come from, and how did they get a 3-1 record so quietly? Of course, I think they've had a fairly weak schedule up to this point. At least I would describe the schedule as being fairly weak.
Yeah.
New Orleans has got to get off the snide, all right? New Orleans is not an 0-4 team. They're better than that. They've only lost their last two games by what? Two games together, I think they've only lost both of them by like 3 points. I mean, that's cumulatively together.
Yes.
So New Orleans is actually getting better right now. New Orleans is going to win a game. This game is at the house in New Orleans. Take New Orleans and the 3.5.
Well, I'm going Chargers.
All right.
I'm just not confident in in the Saints this year. I'm not confident in what Drew Brees is doing. It's not the Drew Brees of old. So I'm actually going to go with San Diego. I really like the team San Diego has. I've always liked Malcolm Floyd. I always liked Philip Rivers in a way as well. So, you know, he looks determined to get something done this year, Philip Rivers. And that's
well,
the look in his eyes I haven't seen in quite a while.
Yeah, he does. And, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I think that's part of why San Diego is where they are. But I just think there has to be something to be said for the pride at this particular time. And, I feel like I'm repeating myself because I think I said something similar last week. But there has to be something to be made of the pride of the New Orleans Saints. And the fact that they're going to be playing at home in front of that crowd that's already starting to pull out the brown bags and put them over their heads and refer to them as throwback uniforms, I think New Orleans is going to pull one off here.
Okay. Well, it's Monday Night Football, Mike.
Yep.
This game is going to be a little interesting only because it's going to have me basically pulling my hair out, clutching at my chest, and tell Elizabeth I'm coming home. And it's the Houston Texans at my New York Jets.
Uh-huh.
Houston's favored by 8. I already see what's happening. Before you even say anything, I have the Texans as my pick.
Okay, you already see what's happening. Referring to?
Arian Foster is going to run amok. I mean, if you have these running backs that are nowhere near Foster's talent and skill level, basically plowing the Jets over, I'm frightful to see what Arian Foster and even Ben Tate can do to this New York Jets defense.
Yeah, yep.
And it hurts.
Well,
I don't think that they're going to do that good through the air. I think the Texans are going to win this game by a lot, and it's going to be because of their running game.
Their ground game, yeah. Okay. I'll throw one out. Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, and I think I've already read the reports. Let me throw it at you, though, and regardless of the reports. If Mark Sanchez comes out and has a first half like we saw from him last week, does Ryan pull Sanchez and go with Tebow for the second half for the whole thing?
I hope so. You want to know why?
Go ahead.
And this coming from a Mark Sanchez supporter, it's because when Tebow is terrible, it's going to shut these fair-weathered fans up and show them that it's not Mark Sanchez's fault. It's the entire team. It's the coaching staff. It's the organization in a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Sanchez is not a terrible quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but he's not a terrible quarterback. He has done a lot of good things with this New York Jets team, and I am sorry. I don't care who is behind this offensive line. With that running game behind them, you ain't prospering on this team.
Yep.
I hope to God that they put Tebow in.
I mean, Ryan has already come out and said that it's absolutely not even an option. It's not going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Well, I mean, not for this week anyhow. I mean, because apparently he, you know, had his seat being put to the fire by the media up there. You know, excuse me, on Monday and Tuesday, constantly, and he finally had to come out and say, look, it's just not flat out. It's not happening. It's not an option.
Yeah.
But I like you, am going with Houston on it. I don't know, but Jonathan, they going to cover that line? What do you think? You think you're saying yes on that one?
I am.
It's an 8-point line in favor of Houston.
Yeah, I am. I'm actually saying it. Like I said, I don't think they're going to do good through the air. Matt Schaub hasn't really shown anything this season to suggest that he's,
I would agree,
you know, being a, you know, back to being a good quarterback.
Right.
You know, Andre Johnson hasn't really looked that great either. And then also the Jets signed Aaron Berry. You know, so to me, having him take over Darrelle Revis' spot is going to, you know, give them a better option. Because Aaron Berry is a good cornerback. He is not a bad quarterback, you know, cornerback at all. He's better than what they have. And I still say it, and I said it before, he's better than Antonio Cromartie. Mm-hmm. So to me, it frees up Cromartie to cover the, you know, to cover the wide, you know, the number twos and the number three wide receivers on the Houston Texans. And hopefully Berry will play a little bit. And I think that'll really help out. On their defensive end. They needed that boost. I really like that signing. I know he's a troubled guy, but supposedly he's found his ways. I mean, we've heard that before. But then again, who knows? We'll see what happens. But you know what? The Jets have a pretty good track record of signing these troublemakers, and you know they've been pretty good with the Jets.
Well, that's where they need to go. They need to go to the Jets. All the troublemakers in the world should go to the Jets.
Hey, why not? The new Cincinnati Bengals of the NFL. But yeah, Houston, and they'll cover it. They'll definitely cover the spread.
Well, it looks like you and I actually agreed on more than we disagreed this week.
Well, here and there, there's a few games we disagreed on.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, Mike. It'll be a good one, though, this week. I think so.
There's some good matchups on there.
All right. You know what? Let's get rid of the professional football. Let's flip it over to college football. Something I never thought I would talk about. But the whistleblower from Penn State, Mike McQueary, he actually filed a $4 million lawsuit against Penn State. Now, Mike, I'm not heavily into college football. Never was. I do read it. I do cover, you know, I do look at box scores. I do keep up on it. Just for instances like this. I stay with the Penn State stuff pretty well, you know, because I wanted to know what was going on, and, you know, it sickened me, and I wanted to see what was going to happen, you know, as, you know, the days progressed after all that had happened. But you know more about this than I most likely do.
Actually, well,
most anybody knows about this more than I do. From what you read, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I personally think McQueary might have a case. You know, he's indicating that, in fact, you know, in many respects, his reputation has been defamed, which I frankly think it has been,
yeah.
That, in fact, there was a rather plausible objective on the part of Graham Spanier, who's the former president of Penn State, to publicly discount the claims that were being made by McQueary, which ultimately did turn out to be correct, albeit he didn't exactly have all of the timeline right. That is according to the report then that was later released. Nonetheless, apparently his claims were accurate, and that he's indicating, and I, you know, obviously I'm only going on what I've read on the, you know, on USA Today and some other of the sites. But apparently his lawsuit indicates that Spanier made some public comments where, in fact, he said outright that the claims that were being made by McQueary were completely erroneous, and that Spanier was backing Tim Curley and Gary Schultz. Tim Curley was the athletic director, and Schultz was the vice president.
Yeah.
And by so making those claims, in fact, what he was doing was he was discounting McQueary completely. McQueary, of course, then was released of his duties, released of his position. Can you imagine being in his position at this point trying to get a job anywhere? Nobody's touching this man.
No, of course not. Absolutely
and,
not.
And so therefore, and in, you know, let's consider for a moment. There have been no charges brought against McQueary. If anything, he's been, as you pointed out, the whistleblower. And really, if there's somebody in this that really hasn't had a fair say or a fair shake in any of it, it's been McQueary. He had nothing to do with the situation. And yet he's sitting out there on the, pardon the pun, sitting out there on the sideline, looking in and going, I'm done. You know, what am I going to do? Where I got no place to call home. I can't get a job. You know.
Well, and then you know what? He ain't going to get a high school job.
No. No, Nobody would even consider. Can you imagine? This guy's name is probably known far and wide all over this country. And I frankly think he may have a case. Listen, whether it goes to litigation or not, I frankly think Penn State is probably going to, they're probably going to make a deal with him. This thing may not ever see the light of a courtroom. He may not get $4 million, but he's going to get something out of it. And that'll indicate right there. I don't know. I mean, when I first read it and I'm thinking about it, and of course, the whole, I guess in some respects, the whole Sandusky and Joe Paterno and all that kind of stuff has kind of left our minds a little bit as we've moved into a whole new college football season, and we're really not thinking about it. And all of a sudden it comes back up again yesterday, and I'm sitting here and I'm going, wow, you know something? He may have a point.
Yeah.
He may have a point. So, well,
let me ask you this, Mike. Being a human being, right? And I know, when things happen, people think of their jobs first. Oh, if I do this, I might get fired, or if I do this, I might not get a job elsewhere. But McQueary himself, he admits regret at not doing more. So, he said that, and he knows it, right?
Yes.
If it was me, and I walked in and I saw what was going on between Sandusky and a kid inside of a shower stall, I wouldn't have thought twice. I would have snapped an arm bar on this guy and separated his arm from his shoulder.
Yeah.
Now, I can't talk for other people, but he said he was stunned. He was scared. But I go the other way in saying that he didn't do enough. Because, a lot of these guys still saw Sandusky after all of this happened, and they should have known that nothing was going on, right?
Well, I suppose you can look back on it in 2020 hindsight. It's very difficult to get inside people's heads many years thereafter.
I mean,
that's
what I would have done. Like I said, I don't know what he was going to do. I don't know what he thought he was going to do. But, I mean, it's instilled in us as children. If you see something go wrong, you call the authorities. Right? Am I right?
Let's go back for just a moment, and I'm not defending anybody here.
But look, there's a second part to that. My second part of it is that do you think because he was working at such a big, well-known university that he thought of job security before anything else, like right at the spot?
That's a great question, and I was just going to address it. Here's what I think McQueary thought, and again – I'm only speculating. I do not want to presume that I'm getting inside this man's head. You must remember, this was 2001 or 2002.
Correct.
All right? So it was 10 years ago. McQueary at that particular time.
In his late 20s.
Exactly. Thank you. McQueary at that particular time was a young person. He was not even a full-fledged coach on the team at that particular time. And so he's, I guess, going by the situation. He sees this and goes, oh, my God, what in the world? I can understand if, in fact, he said there was trepidation on his part. I suppose in some respects I understand his feeling on it. We very easily can all sit back and judge and jury of that very, very easily now and say, oh, well, you dumbass. I mean, what the hell are you doing? I mean, that's not the thing to do. Of course.
Yeah.
But in that particular position, was he thinking about himself? Yes. There's probably no doubt about it.
Yeah.
He's going, oh, my God, how am I going to reconcile this? What do I do?
Yeah.
This isn't right. I know this isn't right. Now, knowing that it wasn't right, he did do something about it. Now, could he have done more? Everybody knows that, yes, now you could have done more.
Well, I mean, considering, you tell your boss, which at the time was Joe Paterno,
mm-hmm.
he saw nothing was going on, so he then went to tell Joe Paterno's bosses, which ended up being Tim Curley, Gary Schultz, and
right.
whoever else was involved in it. And then after that, still nothing was being done. So
right.
do you think he should have took that extra step, that extra measure, to maybe contact the local authorities or FBI?
Let me ask you a question.
Shoot.
Put yourself in that position for a moment.
Yeah.
You go, and I don't care what the environment is, and I don't care what the job position is.
Yes.
You recognize something's gone wrong. Let's say, forget this particular offense. Let's say you are privy to someone that you're working with that is stealing from your company. And yeah. You've witnessed them do that. Okay, now, you go to your boss. All right? You tell your boss. All right? Your boss says, okay, yeah. All right, I'll speak with him. All right. And so a week goes by or some time goes by, and you still see the guy doing the same thing.
Yeah.
He's doing the same thing. He's still stealing. All right, now you go to your boss's boss, and you say to them, I know for a fact that this guy is doing X, Y, and Z. All right?
Yeah.
And now you've gone to them this is the second time around now, and yet you still see the guy around your office building months later, years later. Wouldn't you assume for a moment, all right, listen, I guess they dealt with it.
No, let me say this. Theft and sexual molestation of a child are two different things.
I knew you were going to do that.
No, but see, now look. Now, if there was thieving going on and then I see, okay, well, I went to two different things and nothing was, you know, the guy's still here, so maybe he's not stealing, maybe he returned the stuff, whatever. But there was a guy that was sexually molesting a boy, a young boy, and I don't care what they say. You know Mike McQueary, Joe Paterno, whoever, have seen Jerry Sandusky in the meantime, between 2001 and up to all this came out and he was arrested and whatever.
Sure, but at that point, you don't know what – I mean, it's very possible that somebody like McQueary could have assumed, all right? And that's the only thing – I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to say he assumed that, in fact, it was addressed – with Sandusky by the parties that he took it to. Mm. And, okay, you know, there it was. Now, McQueary never came out and said that he ever saw it happening again.
No.
Okay.
Well,
so,
supposedly after that, I mean, you know, he was off campus or whatever. So.
Now, if McQueary had seen it occurring again, all right, well now, but if
But then again, I mean, you can't be that dumb to not know if something like this is going to happen at such a huge popular, famous, well-known Penn State campus that it wasn't going to leak somehow. Because maybe the president was keeping under wraps, maybe Joe Paterno was keeping under wraps, but if they did their duty as human beings and contacted local authorities because a kid was raped.
Yes.
Right. No matter what gets through to the authorities, it always gets leaked.
Yeah.
You can't be stupid to say 10 years later, how come this never came out in the media?
Okay. Now, you know that I'm a former teacher. I'm a former educator.
Yes.
Okay. And I've been involved in education prior to getting involved in sports media the way I am now. Yeah. I was a teacher for 15 years, most recently as of last year.
Yeah. And before you say this, when I was in school, my principal at that school was taken out in handcuffs because molestation charges were immediately announced against him. So I've seen it happen in front of my eyes.
Wow.
Of a person of power at a school.
Sure.
Molesting kids, and he was taken right out, even though it was only somewhat proven at the time.
Okay. Right. I mean, even an allegation will get you removed.
Exactly.
All right.
We've seen it happen all the time.
Which we can leave that whole concept for a different show.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, that then you start getting into some really gray areas.
Yeah.
However, I will tell you that in the 15 years that I just got done spending, from 1998 until most recently this past June, I saw the entire atmosphere of that whole, interaction with teachers and students and all of that kind of environment. How it evolved and how it changed. And I'm going to tell you right now, in 1998, 1999, 2000, 2001, there was not the education, there was not the kind of professional development that was done for people in institutions, in schools, and in other places that's being done today to alert those individuals like McQueary or anybody else to the fact that, hey, these are your responsibilities. This is what you have to do. It was almost assumed that everybody just knew what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
All right, the laws were on the books, but there was nobody actually instructing instructors, educators, people that were in that environment. There was nobody instructing us as to what our responsibilities were. I can tell you that there were numerous times that I would take issues to my administrators in various different schools, and I would say, you know, I kind of witnessed this. I'm not quite sure, or I heard this. I'm not quite sure, you know, what do you do about this?
Yeah.
And see, I would take it to them, and after I took it to them, I would sit back and go, okay, they know about it now.
Yeah.
So, just speaking from the time frame that we're talking about, all right, McQuarrie's allegations go back to 2001, 2002. I can speak to what things were like as a educator in Pennsylvania in the early 2000s.
Yes.
It does not surprise me that perhaps maybe he was feeling, McQuarrie was feeling, that he was doing all he could to address the situation. So I'm just giving you a very personal
perspective. Yeah, but yet he regrets not doing enough.
Well, sure, certainly. And can I tell you right now, we would all regret it. Well, I mean, what else are you going to say but to say, you know, damn it all, now that I'm thinking about it, I probably should have done that. But at that particular time, he would have thought that he was doing the right thing.
No.
You know, it's the old Monday morning quarterback. It's the 2020 hindsight thing.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know. I kind of feel like if I argue for this in one way or another, I can't win it. I don't want people getting
the impression. Well, no, of course. Listen. You know, an opinion is an opinion. I mean, it's a tough spot. I mean, who knows if McQuarrie really did the right thing? Who knows if he didn't do the right thing? I mean, there's only one person that knows that, and that's Mike McQuarrie himself.
Exactly.
So, you know what? If there's more stuff going around that nobody knows about, it's these guys who know it. They have to live with it. Unfortunately, it's the kids that had to be the victims and suffer, because these guys aren't suffering. I'm sorry, man. You know, it's the kids that have to live their whole life now with all of this kind of stuff. So,
for sure. And I guess the only comment, the only reason that we got onto the topic is because of the fact that I said, well, I don't know, McQuarrie might have a lawsuit. Now, remember, we're not talking
about... You know what? Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. So,
you know, remember, this is not a criminal situation. This is a civil situation.
Yes.
He's bringing basically a defamation of character case.
Yeah.
And as I sit back and as I'm reading it with an objective, open mind, saying to myself, okay, potentially there may be. Because let's get it straight. In this particular case, there really has been only one person that has spoken. Be it rightly or be it wrongly, there's only been one person that really has spoken. And that's Ben McQuarrie.
Yeah. All right, let's get off of Penn State. That's something we could talk about for probably hours, and it'll probably get us nowhere. So, but you know what we're going to talk about, Mike?
Go ahead.
We have a little over 7 minutes left in the show. I just want to, throw this out there. NBA, just a few minutes ago, the NBA basically, they formally announced their new flopping rule, God they're finally doing this, because I am tired of flopping. Now, if only FIFA could do this, and soccer could have a flopping rule, that would be phenomenal. But put it this way, violation one, you get a warning. Violation two, a $5,000 fine. Violation 3, a $10,000 fine. Violation 4, a $15,000 fine. Violation 5, a $30,000 fine. And any violation after that could be a game suspension.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've seen a lot of flopping in basketball.
Yeah.
Everybody has.
Yes.
Are you happy that the NBA has finally done this?
Well, in some respects, I'm going to be curious to see how they implement it.
Yeah.
That's my interest in the whole thing. And whether you're going to have uniformity in implementation.
Yeah.
Because in some respects, sometimes, isn't it a judgment call?
Yes.
Now, I mean,
it is, but you can clearly see that so many times they flop.
Yes.
You know, but when it's something legit to where, it's, you would have to use your judgment call, or you don't think of it. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's been so many players in this league, and I can go on and on and on and on and on about – I mean, look, in game one this year between the Spurs and the Thunder, Ginobili and James Harden, they flopped at the same exact time.
Yeah. On the
floor, and they were standing next to each other. It was the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever seen.
Okay. Well, let's do a comparison for a moment, Jonathan, because you're a great NHL fan. Let's go back to the days when they were trying to crack down on the whole diving situation. All right? I'm taking off. I'm a skater. I'm taking off. And, you know, a guy gets a stick a little too close to me, and I dive.
Yeah.
I take a dive, okay, in an effort to try to get the penalty.
And which,
you know, if you recall,
it's, you know, you go to the penalty box now.
If you recall correctly, that used to be rather standard. That used to happen. And then I want to say it would have been like in around, what, the late 80s?
Yeah.
Would it have been around the late 80s or so that the NHL and referees started to crack down on that and they made it a penalty? Okay. They didn't attach monetary fines to it.
No.
Okay. So why are we attaching monetary fines to it? Why don't we just amp up?
You know, honestly, I think it's going to go the long route and say, okay, well, if a guy flops, it's an automatic free throw for the opposing team. I mean, that's basically what you could do if you don't do the fine.
Yeah, right.
But there's so much flopping going on in basketball. You know, in just one game alone, you see multiple flops. Compared to in hockey, you may see a dive here or a dive there. I think it's a lot more done in basketball, and this coming from a hockey and a basketball fan and somebody who has played basketball their whole lives on amateur level,
yeah.
I've seen a lot of flopping, and it's a lot more done in basketball than it is in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
I think by doing just one free throw, it'll still give them the incentive to flop whenever they want.
Oh, okay.
I think by attacking their wallets, they think that they could basically get it out of the game quicker that way.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I got you.
You know, will it work? I hope so, because it's, you know, it's disgusting. Like I said, you know.
Well,
you know,
I was going to say, how do you feel
about that Ginobili and James Harden thing? You know, Ginobili went up with the ball. He barely touched James Harden's face.
Yes.
James Harden flew back. But then Ginobili flew back, too, because
it was
the most ridiculous thing that you should be embarrassed by.
It wasn't even orchestrated well. Let's get it straight. I mean, it really wasn't. I remember seeing that play.
It was disgusting. I'm glad the NBA established this. It's about damn time. Now, it would be great to see soccer
do something similar. Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, you do see it an awful lot in soccer.
Come on. The guy gets hit in the back. He goes down clutching his ankle.
Yeah, it is. It is really...
Soccer is a phenomenal game. But when you see stuff like that, you just sit there and go, come on, man, that's embarrassing. Get the
it
help.
It really is ridiculous. I couldn't agree with you more. I actually think it's more prevalent there than – I mean, you're right. I mean, it does happen all the time. It's
and again,
like an NBA, but.
Legal mob. So, you know, they'll do whatever they want.
I'll throw another one at you real quick, though, because I see what we have. We have just a couple of minutes. But I'll throw one at you real quick, though, dude, because I know how much of a big Knicks fan you are. USA Today headline, Knicks set to become NBA's oldest team in history.
Awesome. Love it. And at the same time, Rasheed Wallace signed with the Knicks today. So
and that's what they meant by set to become, assuming 38-year-old Rasheed Wallace ends his retirement and signs with the Knicks this week. As expected, the 13-man rotation would average 32 years and 240 days old.
Yes.
And that is the oldest in NBA history.
Yes.
So, we were talking about the Knicks
Listen, I'm not really going to talk about that because they're 75 years old as long as they win.
Oh, that's great.
He's comfortable with vets on his bench and on his team. You got to give him that because when you had D'Antoni, you're bringing in all these, you know, running gun guys, and it got them nowhere.
Well, we were just talking about the Knicks the other night, and I just recalled. I had recalled how I had said to you, well, sounds like an aging team.
Yes.
Well, not only is it aging, it's now apparently the oldest in history. So.
Yes, it is. All right, well, I got a few seconds left. I just want to mention Friday's show, 12 o'clock.
There you go.
To 1 p.m. We have a very special guest, Jamie Jacobson from the Green Bay Chill of the phenomenal Lingerie Football League is going to be on with us. We're going to talk about the LFL. We're going to talk about the upcoming season in April. Hell, let's talk about the Atlanta expansion team. We're going to get everything from Jamie, and we're also going to talk Beat the Shark. We have Jeff Perini, the Shark, call in that day, if it's possible. If it's not, hopefully Jamie will talk a little trash.
Jeff better be here.
That'd be great. So remember, 12-2-1 Friday, right here on Blog Talk Radio, also on FanJunkies.net, also on YouTube, and the CLW83 Network. Mm-hmm. Mike, once again, phenomenal show.
It was.
Thank you for being my wingman. It's great. Yeah. Thank all of our wonderful listeners and our callers today, Brett from New Jersey, Joey from Brooklyn. We'll see you all on Friday.
Terrific calls. Thanks.